Democracy in Action, a program on how a state functions, featuring in-depth discussions with experts on governance, politics, and decision-making. Tune in as every week we explore the complexities of governance. What is democracy? What is your role as a citizen? All these and more in Democracy in Action, Thursday at 9 a.m. with a repeat at 9 p.m. the same day. Stay informed and engage with Democracy in Action. Radio Mirai, the voice of peace.
Hello and welcome to Democracy in Action with me, Sunny Martin. And today we are going to be discussing about women's protection. And our lines will be open to you later on, where you can call on 091-206-2079 or 091-206-2950. Or you can also call us on our MTN line 092-9686297. Those are all our lines. You can also send us your comment or question to our SMS number 091-2177-141. As we are discussing, why is it very important for the government and the partners and other stakeholders to prioritize the issue of women's protection against issues to do with sexual violence, gender-based violence, and also violence against women in politics. This is what we are going to be discussing with my three guests who are already with me here in the studio. Let me take this chance to welcome Sheila. And Sheila is the United Nations Mission in South Sudan Senior Women's Protection Advisor. Welcome to Radio Mirai.
Thank you.
And also I have with me here Josephine Chandiru, who is the Executive Director of Steward Women. Welcome to Radio Mirai.
Thank you.
And also I have Gima Robert Kani, who is the Executive Director of Road to Economic Development Organization, ORIDO. You are most welcome to Radio Mirai once again.
Thank you, Sunny Martin, and all listeners of Mirai FM.
Okay. Right away with a very simple question. Let me begin with you, Sheila. Why is it very important for the government, the partners, the UN, and other stakeholders to ensure that women's rights are protected?
It's a very important question to start with, because as we know, women are 50%, if not more, of the population, and they have the same rights as every other human being on this earth. So to be able to not only give them the space to discuss about what is important in the public sphere, in their own homes, the private sphere, and in society is therefore one of the most important rights. I'm looking at all this from the perspective of the rights of women, and also from the point of view that when these rights are not respected or are breached, women are, as well as other human beings, but everybody has the right to be protected. And there should be in place enough safeguards for women to find protection.
Right. And Chandiru, first of all, just a recap. The last time you were here, we discussed at length the issue of what are the legal framework, what are the forms of violence against women. Just a recap once again, has anything changed as to in terms of the legal framework? Are there cases? Because I remember one time somebody called from Raja and saying it should be a will that your presence should be seen on the ground. So what are the forms of violence against women in this country which you can talk of?
Thank you, Sunny, and welcome listeners. The forms of violence in South Sudan, generally we have sexual violence, which is common in the form of rape, including conflict-related sexual violence. We have also marital rape, which is very common, and you could call, you could name it as domestic violence. We have child marriages. We have forced marriages. We have property disputes. So these that I've mentioned are very, very common, but the commonality also varies from one location to another. You'll find in Juba, rape is a hotspot. Juba is hotspot for rape. And then you also go to other locations where you find marital rape or domestic violence is also hotspot. And since our last talk show, I remember the colleague from AWIL calling and said they needed some support there. We haven't had any change. We haven't made any progress since then to support the team of AWIL, although I was on ground in AWIL. But what I would like to say is currently there is a mobile court happening in Bentiu that is due to end by 31st of August. Mm. Yeah, that's the current progress so, that I could what, mention.
What are the causes of all these forms of violence against women? What is causing this thing? Early marriage, rape, what are the main causes? Or the triggers? Because yeah. Somebody cannot just wake up in the morning and begin harming a woman.
Yes, so I would like to really say that there are several causes of GBV, but one of it I would like to mention is poverty. Poverty has a lot of link with child marriages, with early marriages. Research from what works found that when families are pushed into poverty, harmful practices like child marriages increase, where young girls may be pulled out of school for marriage to help their domestic tasks, but also to generate income. And unemployment and economic distress in household can also increase instances of intimate partner violence as well. So poverty is one, and then breakdown of services where there's a collapse of community structure and rule of law. It means that women will find themselves without social support and protection systems in violent situations, and this can also result into women and girls traveling great distances to search for food, water, fuel, and increasing the risk of GBV. I think this is also what is really commonly happening now, this time of the rain season, where the grass has grown and women are going to the bush to collect firewood. They also meet some of these forms of GBV.
All right. Yes, Gima, how is your organization supporting women in terms of economic development or economic empowerment? Because according to your organization, it says Road to Economic Development Organization.
Yes, thank you for that very critical question. And before I go to that, I just wanted to add a few things. Just one point to the common causes of violence against women in our country. And she has clearly mentioned all the top ones, but again, culturally, we are very sensitive, and there are so many cultural practices that continue to contribute to high level of violence against women. I want to mention here, for example, the practice of alcohol. Alcoholism is very much some causes of violence against women in our communities. And though some part of our community, we have learned that some kind of violence, some kind of a beating of a woman is culturally allowed. It's one of the causes, because it's a bad culture, but it is allowed and it is normal in some communities. So I just wanted to add to that.
Okay.
So I think RedO, the Road to Economic Development Organization, is at the forefront of fighting for the rights of women through different pillars, one of which is legal aid. Of course, we'll talk about this much later. Your question was how we are empowering women economically to live
a decent life.
Of course, it's our focus to build their capacities in different ways so that they are able to live a decent life. So it's all about empowering them economically, because in our society we all accept or know that they are the most vulnerable. When it comes to economic empowerment, they are the most vulnerable, and it is also one area in which we violate their rights. We violate their rights. We find that in some cultures, some practices, we marry many women to be as labor for cultivation, for farming. But as in some cultures, you find it's women who go to the market and sell things and come give the money to the man of the house.
Okay.
It's very common here. It's that is an economical fight against women's right.
Okay.
So we do a lot of that, but in terms of raising awareness, empowering them to know their rights, and empowering them to know how they can live a sustainable life.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, Sila, according to key messages on violence against women in politics and those by the United Nations Secretariat Executive Committee on the 17th of January 2020, they refer to violence here to include psychological, physical, and sexual violence. How is the ANMIS respective entity, or how are you supporting Artigono in this case to ensuring that women can fully, also equally and safely exercise their rights to participate in politics and also in public life?
Yes, just to say that my brief is really conflict-related sexual violence, so I'm going to talk to that. There are others at mission level who deal with the broader aspects of SGBV, etc. And I know that... just give me a second to explain conflict-related sexual violence. And that is... any type of sexual violence which has a link to a conflict. I am wondering if my colleague is going to check on something. We'll just go ahead. So, yes, you know, I would like to borrow from a report which is... which was, you know, which a thematic report on violence against women in politics, which was presented by the Special Rapporteur on Violence Against Women in 2018, where this they analyzed the where she analyzed the issue of violence against women in politics, and including its manifestation in parliament and elections. And this is, she makes some very interesting recommendations, but she also emphasizes the importance of preventing and combating gender-based violence to enable increased political participation for women. Some of the key points: global progress, while there has been women's political participation, which has been improved over the last century, they remain underrepresented at all levels of decision-making. Only one quarter of parliamentarians worldwide at that time when the report was written were women. And then violence against women in politics, this represents a violation of their rights, women's rights, to live free from gender-based violence generally, but also it undermines their civil and political rights, discouraging their participation. Some of the recommendations that she made outline, for example, the prevention and combating GBV in politics, including during elections and within parliaments. To summarize, addressing violence against women in politics is crucial for promoting gender equality and building resilient democratic institutions. So this is what we would be working on from the from our perspective. We'll borrow some of the key issues.
Yeah.
And she has also she also talked about the obstacles. Maybe we'll have the opportunity to do so, and also some strategies which and recommendations she offers.
Okay, and just in this scenario, how is ANMISA supporting the government in ensuring that women also participate equally and safely in politics and public life in South Sudan for this matter?
Yes, Political Affairs Division, as well as the Gender Affairs Division, are involved in ensuring that women's voices are taken into consideration whenever discussions are happening on political issues and participation issues. But also the SRSG, Mr. Nicholas Haysom, also meets with civil society in the context of elections, getting ideas, etc., in his engagement with civil society. But also with the Human Rights Division, there is a project working on the civic space, political and civic space, mm-hmm. And to ensure that everyone has access to the space, to ensure that it doesn't shrink, and to ensure that there is enough advocacy around the thematic area of political and civic space for everybody, including women and other groups, minority groups, etc., to access the civil and political space.
All right. And Chandiru or Gima, any of you can take on this question. What mechanism is in place to report, address and prevent violence against women in South Sudan, and how can this mechanism be strengthened? The reason is why I'm asking this, I'm sure you have heard, if you follow international news, last night in India, in Calcutta, women marched on the street protesting the rape and the murder of a young 31-year-old doctor who was raped and murdered. So the fight against GBV is not only in Africa, it's also far beyond. So what are the mechanisms in place in this country? Because now we have seen in India, women have taken to the street protesting. Last night at midnight, they never slept. So what is being done here in South Sudan to address the issue? Because we have been talking about GBV. In fact, if you go to the archive of Radio Miraya, most of the discussion here, always, not only in this program, but in other programs, talks about GBV all the time, but it seems like it's having a very little impact, and people are not paying more attention to that.
Oh, yes, I think I will start,
go ahead.
Then my colleague can add if she can. Yeah, I think let's put aside India and come back to us home here, yeah, in South Sudan. And it is one aspect which I really want members to get very clearly, what we call the referral pathway up to the GBV and juvenile court. You are asking about the mechanism. We have a referral pathway which leads up to the GBV and juvenile court for justice to be attained. So in the context of South Sudan, in any community, once there is a violence against a woman, be it rape, be it any domestic violence, so if you're in a living area, we call them residential quarter, or we call them healer, the first person you have to talk to is your sheikh healer or your area chief, who should be able to usher you or to direct you or to take you to police station. Not only any place in police station, in every police station we have what is called special protection units, where any woman who is violated, who can go and report to a specialized investigator, specialized person in that special protection unit, then that's where she will be attended to professionally, it is not open to everyone. You may not know this is SPU, but when you ask Wenu Maktab Albainu Warta Nuswan, they will direct you. You may find it is a local person, not in uniform, dressed how, but this is the right person you can talk to who will listen to you. So our people do not know. Any SGBV should not be resolved at Hila or anywhere. They should go to a special protection unit in the police, narrate what is ever has happened to them.
Many women in this country fear to report because of stigma, because of being disowned by the family members, because of being abandoned by the husband, or she may be divorced. These are the factors we have had these many times, and you are aware about them.
Yes, those are the facts on the ground, but these are kind of a behavioral thing and a cultural thing, which will take time, of course, to change.
Okay.
That's why our awareness is very important. But the whole issue is staying home will not give you your right. You have your right have been violated. Violence has happened to you. You need to seek justice. You will not get justice by remaining home. That's why we're giving the pathway how you can achieve justice.
Okay.
So the mechanism we have in place is the referral, and we have a GBV and juvenile court, which is a specialized court that handles all forms of gender-based violence against men, women, children, and the girls, everyone equally in the country. Unfortunately, it's only one in Juba. So our mechanism here is through SPUs, and we have a specialized court that addresses violences against the women in the country.
Yes, Chandiru, you want to add something?
Yeah, let me add to what my colleague Kima has said. Just practically, we also encourage survivors to report cases of GBV to people that they trust. People that they trust and people who can support them to provide some information. Just like 10 days ago, we were doing a workshop where we were sharing with survivors, the SPU, CSOs, lawyers, how survivors can be supported in those communities where there is no GBV actor. And this is where the importance of the referral pathway comes. A referral pathway has all the services that a GBV survivor needs to know. It has a health service, it has legal services, it has psychosocial support, and it has those actors who are providing these particular services, including their contact numbers and names of the individuals who should be contacted. So for us, our role is to ensure that the referral pathway is updated and it is disseminated in communities, and if possible, even in the offices of the Shekahila, so that it also helps the Shekahila to refer those cases. We also encourage survivors that they should report their cases within 72 hours. This helps with keeping the evidence intact and ensuring that in case the survivor wishes to pursue legal action, the evidence can still be obtained, and it is then kept for record purposes to seek legal redress. So the importance of referral pathways is acknowledged here, and also ensuring that the 72-hour rule is observed in addressing GBV. Gima talked about the GBV court. Yes, currently Steward Women Radio, we are doing awareness on the GBV court, including through radio dramas, radio jingles, just to tell communities that radio the GBV court exists, and then cases that it handles are listed. And also today we will be on iRadio to just take communities through the step-by-step ways of achieving justice from the first stage where violence happens, where do you go next, until you reach court, until you receive judgment, and how you can also go for an appeal. So partners out there are doing a lot of work regarding support for GBV survivors.
Right.
May I just come in here, please?
Yes.
Just a quick point I wanted to make with regards to a project we have implemented in Western Equatoria. I really don't want to go into the details, but come up with one specific point. In any program you're working, programmatic activities which involves conflict, we worked with conflict-related sexual violence survivors, one needs to ensure two things. First of all, that they themselves are given the support which makes them more resilient. And secondly, work with the communities so that they are accepted, and that if anything like that may happen, God forbid, again, there is more support and there is more ease with which survivors can report. And even those who have been previously put, subjected to CRSV can also find openings to report even later. Thank you.
All right. If you have just joined us right now, our lines are open. You can call us, and I have three guests with me here in the studio. We are discussing about women's protection. I have with me Gima Robert Kani, Executive Director for Road to Economic Development Organization, RIDO, and also Josephine Chandiru, Executive Director of Steward Women. I have Sheila from the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, Senior Women's Protection Advisor, and our lines are now open. You can call us or send us your comment to our SMS number 091-2177-141, or you can call us direct on our lines 091-206-2079 or 092-9686297. Those are all our lines. You can get in touch with us here and ask your question. Hello, Redimira. Hello. Your name?
Hello.
Yes, your name?
Tolfuk from Nadambar Gaza.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. First of all, I appreciate the topic that you brought up, and I appreciate the presentation of Radio Muraya. I'm very grateful to have guests like that in the studio. I talk more about. But as we are the South Sudanese, you know, as my sister is saying, brother, when you have something happened in from your relative, there is nobody can say this case I will raise up until I got the point. But the most of people that keep quiet at home. And that thing, and at last time, you can blame the government, but the government cannot know anything on the ground. If you got something on the ground, you brought up, after that, the government can share and the
Yeah.
can share it. And that thing, I want to tell the public, when you get something, you go
to report
the place of human rights.
Okay.
And that thing is good for us.
All
Thank
right.
you.
Thank you so much for your comment about the issue of lack of reporting, and he's encouraging people to continue reporting. Hello, Redimira. Hello. Hello. Yes, we have a couple of questions coming in here. This is coming from Pony in WOW. And he says, my question goes to Sheila from ANMIS. Elections are approaching, and there are potential South Sudanese women who may wish to participate or compete for an elective positions come December 22nd, 2024. And these women may be subjected to abuse via social media, and that will discourage them from also competing with their male counterpart, though they have the potential. Has ANMIS and other partners, is there any mechanism you are coming up with to protect or encourage these women through awareness, so that they don't get scared from people who may use social media to abuse them and dig their past and discourage them from participating in an elective position? That's from Pony in WOW. Another question here is coming also to ANMIS. that the United Nations is all over the country, and what role is ARMIS playing in empowering the state government to fight against early child marriage through other departments within ARMIS? Because the issue of illegal child marriage is very rampant in the country. You find a young girl of about 12, 13, she's already married, carrying a baby. A baby carrying a baby. That's a nightmare for our women. Is there any support to the state government to come up with some strong laws that can penalize these men who marry underage girl? That's from Jackson here in Juba. Yes, these two, Sila, going to you. And the issue of reporting will be made, the comment made by one of the caller from Will. Yes, first of all, Sila, these two questions.
Yes, the point about discouraging women to participate in the political process is well taken, and I think it is also something which it's not only in South Sudan that we've noticed this. It is something which happens in many other countries where women put themselves out for public office and try to find ways to enter parliament or other public sphere. There are different programs which other colleagues are doing. As I just would like to remind you, my brief is conflict-related sexual violence. In our capacity at the Women's Protection Advisory Unit, working with others, we are looking at this specific aspect of how and during the process there is violence against women which turns into CRSV, there should be mechanisms, and we are advocating for mechanisms within other those who have the responsibility to ensure that elections are fair, free and credible, and that everybody has the opportunity to participate. I would like to remind all of us that the first and foremost responsibility about ensuring, fair and free elections where everybody has the space to participate really lies with the government and the different institutions, mm-hmm. which should in fact put in place those mechanisms where women should be able to report if they are being intimidated from participation in the public process, the political process. So that's one aspect of things I would like to say. There are different things which needs to be looked at, because addressing violence against women in politics requires a multifaceted approach.
Yeah.
Some strategies could be legal reforms to start with, strengthen laws to criminalize violence against women in political contexts, ensure that perpetrators are held accountable, and of course awareness campaigns, raise awareness about the issue, emphasizing that violence is unacceptable and detrimental to democracy. Also support services, establish helplines, counseling centers and safe space for women affected by violence, where they can get the support that that they need, and also provide legal aid and protection. One of the main things which I believe is important is to train politicians, law enforcement and electoral officials on gender sensitivity and the importance of women's participation at all levels. That is, voters to start with, as politicians themselves, and as those who support politicians and the process.
Okay. And this question about supporting the state government in ending the issue of these underage girls who are being married at that age, that's very risky for them.
you know, as I said, my brief is conflict-related sexual violence.
Yeah.
And the support to underage girls, early marriage, false marriage, etc. for underage girls would be something which other partners within the UN family, the UNCT, like UN, UNICEF, would be focusing on. And maybe UNFPA may have a program, but I'm not too sure. But for sure, UNICEF is the best, agency, UN program where funds, program and agencies which can support the state to address this issue of underage girls marrying early. And as you said, a baby carrying a baby.
Okay. Yes, thank you so much, Sila, for that. Let's find out more as we are running out of time right here. Chandiru, what are some of the major activities right now your organization, Steward Women, what are you doing right now to support women in this country? Are there major activities you are carrying on right now? And maybe briefly you can... if you have any comment about this contribution from our will, that the lack of reporting format. People don't want to report. Last time in the same studio here, the police also came and encouraging people to report anything happening so that it can help the government track and investigate, find the perpetrators and take them to court.
Yes, thank you. I would like to start with the lack of reporting. I think the lack of reporting has a lot to do with this, the stigma that you, Sunny, mentioned, that survivors face in coming out boldly to report their case. Moreover, they need to know that this case might go out of hand might be exposed.
How is it affecting the fight against GBV, for example, the lack of reporting?
The lack of reporting is, of course, reducing the fight. It's weakening the fight against GBV because the colleague from Awil rightly put it, that you will not understand what the survivor is going through. You're not able to provide for them services timely. You're not able to speak with them, so you can't understand what's happening. So the first step to fight GBV is to report. And when it is reported, the established protocols may be used to provide support to the survivor according to their wish. And also, Sheila did talk about the work that UNICEF is doing on ending child marriage. I would just like to add on that Steward Women is working with the UNICEF to end child marriage through GBV prevention, response, and risk mitigation activities in WAU and Raja, where we have established women and girls friendly spaces, where women and girls visit the center to access psychosocial support activities, livelihood activities, and then counseling, and then group games where they are able to share with their colleagues. They also have sessions on menstrual hygiene where they are able to share their experiences. So this is what UNICEF is doing. In addition, also there is a program on communities care, which is for GBV prevention, where community leaders engage in dialogues to address a harmful gender norms.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And finally, Gima, your last remark as we conclude.
Yes. my last remark is one. Let us know that once a GBV is done to a person, that person at the end of the day needs justice, and the justice is gotten at the GBV and juvenile court. So let's help our sisters, our brothers, our uncles, our survivors of this violent act to report and support them all the way. I know justice is very expensive in our country context here, but let's give them support to achieve justice, because it's only justice that will heal them from the inner wound that they might have suffered during all of this. And I want to encourage all the women, despite what is going on, despite the fear, to take up the fight for their rights in the country. And with the support of the CSOs, our doors are open for legal awareness for how to guide them. We can guide them to achieve their peace.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, Sheila, finally, your remark on this important, the issue of women's protection in South Sudan.
Thank you. I just wanted to raise two points at this moment. That is, there are many things which have happened in other African countries which could be of, which could be of help and moments of learning for South Sudan. I'd like to mention, for example, the Mukwege Foundation in DRC working on CRSV making sure that when survivors arrive, they get a survivor-centered approach their different issues are treated at the Panzi Hospital, which is led by Dr. Mukwege. I think we can learn a few things from this activity. But above all, at this point, my second point is we have near to us a country, Rwanda, which leads the way in regard to representation of women in parliament, standing out as a global leader in women's political representation. 2013 was a historic achievement for them. Record breaking, 64% of seats were won. We can do things too, in a way which allows women to participate fully all elections. Thank you
very much. I would like to thank my three guests here, Gima and Josephine plus Sheila. Thank you so much for taking your time to come and speak to the people of South Sudan. I thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sunny.
Thank you.
And with that, we have come to the end of Democracy in Action for this week. My name is Sunny Martin. Stay tuned to the rest of the programs coming up. Bye-bye for now.